Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is episode number 26 of the EBNP. Our guest is Jacob Johnson, the founder and chief executive officer of Lagger Gaming. Jacob's drive is admirable. You can see that in his accomplishments at such a young age. In this podcast, we discuss his entry into gaming and esports while he was still in middle school, the learning experience he gained from coordinating events as a young entrepreneur, and how he's developed his team and teaching others how to get into esports. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox again with the Esports Business Network podcast. Today is episode number 26, I believe, and our guest for today is Jacob Johnson of LagR Gaming. Welcome to the show, Jacob.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
I really appreciate what you've been doing, and you know, as much as it seems like that esports and gaming and all this stuff is getting out of control, you seem to be able to bring it to you and make it work for yourself. And you've been doing some really cool things, especially with Teachable and some, Udemy and those in the courses you've been creating and whatnot. And so I want to get into that into this episode. I want to talk about how you've been building a brand online and how you've been operating a business in the space. So, but first off, before we jump all into that, let's get to know Jacob. When did you first experience gaming?
Casually, obviously, I've been playing like since I was like six, on GameCube, playing like Mario Kart, Mario Party, that kind of stuff with my friends. Competitive wise, I would say about 2012, Call of Duty, like everyone else, because everyone has that Call of Duty phase where they think they're good, whether they're good or not. And I really got into competitive side when Call of Duty had Clan Wars and they had their own app and everything for it back in Call of Duty Ghost and Advanced Warfare. And I met a lot of friends online and friends through school and everything back then. And we started doing Clan Wars and other stuff like that. And then that slowly moved into me hosting events, then me having my organization. That's kind of where it all blew up and where, like, I started mostly.
Yeah, you're a young guy, right? Mm-hmm. How old are you? How many birthdays have you had?
Just now, 22.
22 birthdays. So you're actually... You're now like officially you have all the adult stuff, all the adult characteristics of being 21, having been 16, 18, all those things. And there's a lot of people in the audience who are a little bit younger, but where'd you grow up?
Grew up in California. I moved to Tennessee where I am now when I was about 14, beginning of high school, been here since. So Southern boy now.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah, I guess I knew you were in Tennessee, but I didn't know you grew up in California. That's a little bit different. So when I first met you, I having thought that you grew up in Tennessee, I was like, this guy's a little bit strange. Doesn't seem like he grew up in Tennessee. But now I know a little bit more about you. Grew up in California, so you've had more exposure to gaming and esports than the average person growing up in Tennessee. When did you move from California?
2012-ish.
Yeah. So 2012-ish. So you're, how old does that make you? 16?
I was about 14 when I moved
14
here, and now I'm 14. 22, yes.
14. Okay, so when you were there, did you get the chance to go to the BlizzCons, the major conventions or anything like that? Was this business focused gaming career that you're developing now, was it just not in sights yet?
Obviously I wanted to go to a lot of the events. I went to the smaller ones, but back then my family didn't really have the money to do it. And thankfully, mm-hmm. when I moved to Tennessee and started hosting the events and everything, I had the money myself. Because back then, of course, I was younger. My family didn't really have the money to take me to these big conventions because some of those cost a lot. Even if you're not using a hotel or anything, just tickets alone, and that's if you manage to even get one for something like BlizzCon where they're so limited already. So like obviously when I moved to Tennessee, I started to attend more, started to go to a bunch of conventions I can, especially if work allows and that kind of stuff.
So what is your day to day? Are you also doing something else other than esports right now?
I was. COVID's kind of messing with that right now with hours and everything. But yeah, currently a system manager at a gas station. Not as special as it sounds, but yeah.
It seems interesting because you have your communication and the way that you communicate about esports. It makes me think that you have a lot of direction as far as, you know, building up these pieces. So that's why I kind of asked about what was your mindset when you were 14 that got you to where you're at today. So when you moved to Tennessee, did you first start out with this concept of Lagger Gaming, or did you have other things that you played around with before you came, you arrived at Lagger?
I always had that name. Like it's always hard when I try to think of where I came up with that name, but my best bet is I used to have bad internet and always lag, so people always called me a lagger because I was lagging a bunch, and I kind of just went with it. It's like the best solution I could come with the name is I just rolled with it because it sounded familiar. And then I never went with something other than lagger for like my main stuff. Never have, probably never will. It's just me at this point, especially since like in high school, I would always wear my jerseys and teachers would call me Lagger and that kind of stuff. So like I'm more known as Lagger than Jacob, depending on who you ask. So I probably will always go with it and always will.
So as someone who's developed it, so you've built your business out of a personal brand, essentially, or did you have a mindset of building like a company at first when you started getting, or it was just like picked up a nickname playing online and push forward with it, thinking you could develop it into something, you know, bigger?
Obviously, it started with the nickname, especially when I was doing like Call of Duty Clan Wars and everything on the Call of Duty mobile app back then, and doing a lot of that stuff before Call of Duty like really blew up. And then when I started hosting events, then it became more of a company because I had to like rent equipment, buy equipment, rent venues, do all that. So that's when it kind of became a company. And then from the event, I picked up a lot of the top players. Once I started going to these conventions, I picked up a lot of players at the conventions, and it's just been growing since. Like a majority of my Tennessee players I pick up at KIT, which is a major host here in Tennessee every January and July, pre-COVID, obviously. And a lot of my players I meet in person there, whether they're Midwest, Southeast players, because they travel here. So a lot of the connections I made in person, obviously. But at first, yeah, just started nickname into a company, especially when I started hosting events and branched out and had to do more legalities, you can say.
Absolutely. So when you started to get into the scene, you've developed a personal brand under yourself being the username or the in-game name of Lagger. You started developing a team, Lagger Gaming. And so, you know, what were some of these? You started some tournaments and stuff like that. What are some of your highlights, you know, early on and to develop to where it is now?
So on the event side, obviously, like my first event, I was 14 years old and I had 10 teams show up to the event. So that alone was just highlight because that's not something you see really. Even to this day, you don't see that a lot. And then once my event started getting bigger and I was able to rent more equipment after the first few, I could hold more teams. And I had players like Kenny and ABC who are in the pro league now show up. Obviously, they won all my events, but that was predictable back then. So I had a lot of players like that drawing my events. And when I started expanding the events, I had the local colleges near me, Mid-Tennessee State University, where some of my players went to. They're the leaders of their esports organization back then. And I helped them with events. And then I got connected with Vanderbilt University and a couple other colleges. And right now, I help St. Louis University with their Smash Site events when they happen. I also do Call of Duty events with WKU periodically. Obviously, COVID's still affecting that too, sadly. And then it's just been growing since. I think highlights for sure was partnering with the colleges, getting all that. Personally, I have some great highlights too, or at least I think they're great, especially the esports combine that happened October of last year. I got 32 offers total. I got to speak on a couple of the panels, which was great and amazing. Made a lot of connections there for sure, which I think are pretty cool. And then, of course, Lagger, as the organizations love our big highlights, I would say, would be like getting in the Pro League for Ring of Elysium, which died out sadly. Getting in the Challengers League for Rainbow Six in the European Division. Getting in Rotterdam for DreamHack in Europe for Counter-Strike, which was a 16-team invitational. So, of course, all those big events are always big highlights. Of course, when you win a big event, I'm freaking out because we won the big event. So, of course, all those are highlights. I like to keep some of the mementos, too. So, I think the highlights obviously are just dispersed, but we have a couple for sure.
Yeah, so, you know, you started your first event back when you were 14, And so from there, you've kind of developed and done some different things. When did you first get your first player that played for Lagger Gaming?
Or first actual player that isn't like my friend, so to say, I would say 2015, I picked up Midas, who back then, or still is, one of the top three players for Tennessee, especially Middle Tennessee. And he has been with me since day one. He was the first Smash Brothers player I picked up. Back when we didn't have any event wins to now when we have over 100 event wins. He has won many college titles from Volan 2019 to a couple of Collegiate Star League events. And he was with me when he graduated high school. He's still with me and he graduated college this last semester. So I have a lot of players I picked up back then are still with me now. But for sure, he's my first like traditional not friend player, I would say.
Very cool. Very cool. So this isn't really a back and forth, I ask questions, you answer kind of thing. So feel free to jump in and talk about something that's not just specific about Lagger Gaming, but whatever you want to talk about into esports or whatnot. But I do have some more questions for you if you want to learn to explain certain things more in depth. However you want to approach this, but yeah, just some of the highlights from the tournaments. What would you say? What's the community like? How did you build off of the first tournament that you won? Have you gone out to other national tournaments with your players or yourself or what sort of traveling have you done?
Personally, obviously, I go to a lot of the big events like DreamHacks when I can, the PAX events. And especially for DreamHack, they also do tournaments, so a lot of my players will travel. I try to plan around so me and my players can be at the same events. Doesn't work out sometimes between planning and work. Just depends. But I think the last event, obviously, KIT out here in Tennessee, they borrow my equipment sometimes. I help them if they need to. I'm always there with my video camera. So those events are always fun. Like this last one, January, I got to meet four of my Midwest players for the first time in person, and they've been with me for about a year and a half at that point. And it was cool meeting them in person too, because like obviously know what I look like from online, but obviously like seeing someone in person for the first time, I was like, hey, like you finally get to see them. So like I try to plan my like travels around my players. Just depends on timing a lot of times. And for events like I sponsor or land event to, I'm obviously most of the time at. So I usually try to like nudge my players. They're like, hey, attend this one. and that obviously can or can't work out depending on the situation. Now, when I just travel outside of my players, obviously a lot of the events around me I like going to, whether they're open events, college events, or the U.S. Army events are in Middle Tennessee. Those events are always fun to go to, whether I'm talking to people or competing in Fortnite, because Fortnite's like the biggest game still. So it really just depends. Traveling wise, yeah.
Awesome. I guess we go into talking about the building the brand. So what does it take to build a brand in esports? I know it's playing tournaments and whatnot is a big factor, but what about creativity and streaming and trying to get people to acknowledge you and have brand recognition?
Yeah, I think all those play in a role, especially like when you want to start an organization, like, yeah, you look at like the tournaments and the placements, but you also got to think of like the production, like the content, all the other stuff, because that's where a lot falls short. It's like, hey, yeah, we want a big tournament, but like there's nothing outside of that. A lot of organizations and a lot of players fall short when it comes to like, hey, I attend an event, but you have really nothing to show for it. Besides like a bracket link and maybe a photo. So I think tying into the content with that is a big piece, especially like when we first started going to tournaments, obviously it was like, hey, we went to this tournament. Here's a photo, but there wasn't really anything else. And now when my players go to events, I have my photo camera. I can always get videos. Streams obviously are a lot bigger now than they were back then. So we always have that content being made about them, and I can usually share that, publish it myself, depending on who records it. So I think obviously you get to a point big enough where you got to start focusing on the other stuff, especially now with a lot of these events either online or canceled because of COVID, everyone's making content. So like this would be a good time as ever to begin that career or that part of your career, like making content, doing something outside of competing, especially if you compete for a game like Call of Duty where everything's online now and you only play twice a month. So what are you going to do the other like 28 days of the month, whether it's making YouTube videos, streaming on Twitch, that kind of stuff? So I think obviously when you start out, you're not going to be able to afford a lot of that stuff. Once you start competing and you can hopefully make money at it, then branch into like the production side where you'll be making YouTube videos, streaming live streaming, that kind of stuff. I think, and then once you have both of those going at like a good pace, obviously balancing them out would be a good thing. Some organizations like leaning one way or the other, some like balancing it out, that's more of a preference thing because both can work in the long run, I think, especially with the different kind of companies in esports, especially when you have someone like G Fuel who nowadays like to focus a lot more on content than just tournament placements like they used to in the past. So I think that plays a big role. You just got to figure out once you get big enough and you're at a point where everything starts to level out, if you want to lean towards one way, go ahead. That's not going to like ruin you once you're at stable enough. And a lot of people can't get to that point because they're too level-headed on one side or the other. And at that point, you just become like a standstill growth-wise for organization, or you become a content creator that has like just the same fans kind of thing. And sadly, a lot fail because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are you doing to build brand? I know you're on Twitter, you're on a few different platforms, but what sort of content is the Lagger team creating to create that brand awareness?
Yeah, so like recently we picked up a PUBG roster. A few of the members are in the PUBG partner program, meaning they do they produce content solely primarily for PUBG, which gets published by them, so it's be seen by a lot more eyes. But personally, what I like doing with my content creators is a lot of them, when I pick them up, they either don't have a logo or they have a logo and no other branding. So me knowing a decent amount of graphic design, I'll bring them in. Then once they're in, I see exactly what they stream, what kind of games, which I normally know beforehand. I see their like personality when they stream, like what do they have as their emotes, that kind of stuff. Like what do they like showing off as them, like their personality and their brand. And then I work with them to give them a personal logo, which I then make stream graphics out of. So then they have a brand to the face, whether it's Lagger or their own personal brand, which I like it to be both. So then they already have their logo. And then from there, I move on to, I work with Strike Force Energy in Sector 6, which in turn, I bring the players their own affiliate dashboard for Strike Force, their own personal code, which is no way tied to Lagger. And because they already have that personal logo I made them, I can get them a storefront with Sector 6, which again, isn't directly tied to Lagger. So they have two additional revenue sources that helps them beef up the level of their content that they're producing and helps them move forward with that kind of stuff, all while being self-efficient because they can run with their own branding without including the lager branding, but because it's tied through with my sponsors, it still benefits both parties. So even if they choose to leave lager at a certain point or anything, which is totally fine, they can still keep that branding. They can still keep those partnerships because there was nothing directly tied to lager unless they wanted it to be. So like right now, obviously we have our own personal organization coach with these sponsors, but with Strikeforce and Sector 6, there's about 10 other stores that are indirectly tied to me because they're either my streamers, my content creators, or my players, depending on if they also produce content. And a lot of teams don't do that. Especially when you see like TSM, for example, all of their players, even though they rock the TSM logo, they also rock their own personal logo. And of course, if you have the two brand logos, you know, obviously do like collaborations with merch and everything to produce more of a like outreach to like your fans and everything. So that's what I've been planning to do with my players is making sure that they're pretty much self-sufficient without me, but I help them get there. And then they either stay with my organization or leave at that point. It's up to them. I let them do either way. I don't take away the partnerships I gave them. I don't like take away their Strikeforce codes, or take away their Sector 6 codes when they leave me. I let them keep it, and then they're pretty much off on their own at that point, whichever they pick to do.
So there's a lot going on with lager, and I kind of want to, you know, bring a little bit more, you know, definition or bring a little bit more light to kind of figure out exactly like the different pieces and different business structures you've got going on. So there's the there's Lager, which is Jacob, his personal brand. There's Lager Gaming, which is the players that play for the teams, depending on whichever game it is. And so then there's a bunch of different tournament structures and sponsorships and things also sort of align with the Lager Gaming branding. And then there's there's a lot that goes into this Lager Gaming branding. How does this work when you're talking to sponsors, when you're talking to partners, when you're talking to collaborators, kind of, you know, making sure that they're getting the right pieces and getting involved in the right place? I know you also are, and we'll get into the Udemy courses. You're also, instructing people that are new to the industry or looking to enhance their and develop their skills. So like, what is the process? Like, what is the spread? What's the menu items for lack of a better term?
Yeah. So like when I go to, whether it's sponsors, partners, depending on what I'm looking for at the time, I like breaking it up between entertainment, esports, and events. So entertainment, you have the content creation, the videos, anything that can be produced, basically. Then you have esports, which I classify as like the competitions, the leagues, the exhibitions my players do. Basically, anytime my players are out there in the field competing or online competing. Then you have the events, which are the events we host, obviously. So when I reach out to a company, one of my main selling points is, hey, you have an organization that only competes, where I'm an organization that competes and hosts events myself. Here are the events I host. So my main selling point is like, hey, you can have this organization that only attends these events, or my organization that attends these events, hosts these events, and then also competes in these leagues. So when I reach out, obviously I try to sell it all in one point. Sometimes that doesn't work out. Depends on what the company wants to do, what they're budgeted for, because I have many companies who just want to host an event or a sponsor event. So we just work with them for that, and it's like a one-time deal. Then I have the companies that work with the whole brand, like Strikeforce Energy, where we're the only gaming team they sponsor at the moment. Control Freak, which we're a member of their Forge community. We're one of their teams of the month and everything. And then I work with Sector 6 for our merch, which we also done collabs with iSlides USA, who does all the major branding for the NBA, NFL, and all those when it comes to slides. And those are ones that I worked with the whole brand, whereas like back when I was doing events before COVID, we had Jerky XP, Aporia, and a lot of those kind of companies who only worked with us for the sole purpose of the events, which is fine because that shows you what they're out for. So I think having more to sell on will obviously help no matter what organization you are. But my big kicker is, since I do the events and all that, I try to set everything as one. And that, in my opinion, I think that helps me a lot more than would if I didn't host events. So I think it just depends.
Yeah, it's interesting. And so how are you building the relationships? How are you connecting with marketing teams, advertisers, business owners in order to create these deals? And what's, how are you scouting, or how are you building these leads?
So like when I reach out to a company like Strikeforce, for example, I was at, like, I worked at the gas station, and our company got bought out by 7-Eleven, and they sell products in 7-Eleven stores. So they had a rep come out and give people samples of the products. And that's when I spoke to the rep, learned more about the company. And then, of course, I was like, hey, I work at one of the stores you're sold at. And then we kind of talking. That's how that partnership got created. And mm-hmm. then when it came to Control Freak, I've been using their product forever, like everyone, a lot of other people have. And ironically enough, I told them too, I applied to be sponsored by them every 2 months for 5 years. And they said no every single time. And I think they finally said yes, just so I would stop emailing them an application. But I finally got sponsored by them and been working with them for almost 3 years at this point. And it's been great because I started off in their Ascenders program, now in their Forge program. And I'm one mm-hmm. of the highest, and Lagger is one of the highest teams in the Forge program right now, outside of like Mind Freak and SNG and some of the bigger teams. So I think obviously if you're passionate for a company and you show they're passionate for it, most of them will work with you. Obviously some can't, depending on the clientele they have at the time. So obviously go for companies you're passionate for, companies you know off the bat, rather than just companies because they're gaming, especially with Strikeforce. They sponsor UFC fighters and they sponsor NASCAR driver. The last thing they would have thought of is like, hey, let's sponsor gamers. And until I talked to them and showed them like, hey, look how cool it can be. Then one of the owners who's like, oh, I played Mario Kart 30 years ago. Let's sponsor you. And then that's how that started. And obviously a company like that would have never thought about that unless it's someone like me said, hey. So obviously the worst they can say is no. So reaching out to companies like that that are not traditionally esports companies mm-hmm. can't really go wrong, because worst case, they're going to say no. Like, you have nothing to lose if they say no. Like, especially the only thing you lost is the 30 seconds it took for you to email them. And that's not really a loss in any book. And same with like iSlides, back when they were a smaller company is when I reached out to them first time. Helped them get introduced to gaming before they got investments and everything else, and like blew up with the Pro League licenses and everything they have nowadays. So I think reaching out to companies that are not traditionally in esports is a lot easier and a lot more beneficial in the end. Especially, at least from my experience, I get treated better as an org by non-traditional game companies than by traditional gaming companies, especially with like the current mindset of like companies like, hey, we're sponsor you, but we're only give you commission, when that's an affiliation. That's not a sponsorship. And a lot of the companies in gaming now, even on the big end, would take advantage of that and say that they're sponsoring and only give affiliation, which are not the same thing. And that hurts a lot. So I think, especially from personal experience, you get a lot more benefit going out of esports to get sponsors rather than staying in esports. Especially when you think of an energy drink, like there's realistically Tang gaming energy drinks, mm-hmm. but there's 200 not gaming energy drinks. And the only thing difference is like the packaging. It's still an mm-hmm. energy drink. Same with jerky. You have a few gaming jerky brands, but you have hundreds of non-gaming jerky brands. And reaching out to those non-gaming brands, in my experience, will give you way bigger benefits. Obviously, if you reach out to them and they only sponsor you, that's a uniqueness you have to your brand now, being like, hey, I'm the only one they support. Like, I'm the first one they support too, depending on the brand. And you just go from there. So I think that's like a market a lot of people miss, is building the connections outside of esports, especially now all these companies that are like finally pulling the trigger on esports and like, hey, let's get into gaming. And that's because someone at some level of that company like told them, hey, let's do it. So why not be that person to make a company say, hey.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, one thing I want to highlight, something you mentioned, you spent 5 years contacting Control Freak every 2 months to accomplish a goal you'd set 5 years previously. And I think that a lot of people, and you can probably attest to this, want that instant gratification, aren't willing to put in the work, even if they don't have the social media backing, the influence to actually sell product, they don't want to put in the work that you have to at least build the relationship. So, you know, you talked about sponsorships versus affiliate marketing. And so, you know, and another thing to enter there, and I want to get your insight into this and see how you've used it, or if you haven't done it yet, how you've taken advantage of like in-kind partnerships. So have you had any experiences where that in exchange for product, you've been able to accomplish maybe going to a tournament that you wouldn't otherwise be able to go to, you know, be able to move your team, like be able to transport your team or get entry into tournaments online? Have you experienced any in-kind partnerships?
Yeah. So like Strike for example, they help us a lot with the St. Louis event, the Smash Out events. So I told them, hey, I need help sending my players to this tournament. And if you help them, they're giving us a spot for a booth, and my players are, if they're not playing, will be at that booth giving out samples. And that made them like, yes, let's definitely do it, because they already had a lot of the products and then they just needed banners for the booth. So basically they helped me get my players out there, because I told them, we have a booth, we will give products to the 600 people at this event if you help them. And instantly they're like, yes, let's do it. And now for a lot of these events, that's what we do. If it's like a smaller event where we can kind of co-host or sponsor, like Smash Out, which we sponsor and have a lot of the top players, they will in turn, like, they will help us with these events if we set up a booth and do all that, which obviously we do anyways at events where like we're helping firsthand, which does help a lot, especially for the Midwest events where like, even though you're only traveling 100 miles, depending on where you drive, would be a lot of gas. So even the little help just for putting up a booth goes a long way for both us and them, because sometimes these events are 2 or 3 days, and then having a booth up for 2 or 3 days is definitely worth the $50 in gas money they gave us, both to us and to them. They also helped with some of the other events too, with similar situations like, hey, our player's going to be here. We know you have 1,000 flags that you have nothing to do with now. Give us those and we're taking them to this event if you help us get to the event. And they're doing it. And a lot of companies will do that if you bring it up to them the right way. Like, obviously, if you're going to like a DreamHack, you can't put up a booth unless you pay for one. But if you're going to like these smaller 200 or 300 person events, you can pay them to put up a booth, have the sponsor pay that, and have them pay extra, help you get to the event, and you're set. And that does help a lot. And most companies that I have asked to do it have done it. So if you bring it up to them in the right way, they'll be a lot more likely to do it, especially a company that isn't traditionally esports, because obviously, like, if you tell G Fuel you're going to set up a booth for them at an event, half the people there are probably going to be drinking it, so why would they do it? But a company that no gamer knows about, like Strikeforce, they do it in a heartbeat. And now everyone in the Midwest like Strikeforce, and they always know, look for someone in this jersey, and they're bound to have some in their bag. So I think that helps a lot.
Yeah. So I'm listening to your experience and whatnot, I wonder a little bit more about the experience behind how you operate and you've made these decisions. You mentioned being, you know, a manager at a gas station. And when I think of someone who's a manager at a retail store, they pick up a lot of skills that relate to, you know, signage inside of the facility. They learn how to manage the books, schedule people. So you probably have a lot more on the job training or OTJ than the average person pursuing a career in esports. I think a lot of people are either just going to college, maybe they're learning like a trade or something like that, but they don't really have job experience to put into work. And I know you're on your way from graduating really recent. You mentioned it in the Facebook group, and I think also in on the Discord server that you're really close to graduating. What value do you place on the time you spent learning skills and your trades and things in the real workforce compared to like somebody who's maybe not developed those skills through the education system or through just being an influencer, people who just get famous overnight?
Yeah. So like, especially with the gas station, like, every month we had to put up new signage, new promotions. So obviously I know where to put stuff that would get more eyes, obviously, whether it's like on a display in a gas station or on a jersey. So I think a lot of that, yeah, you have to learn one way or another, and me learning it in the real world basically does help a lot more. Obviously, I think a lot of that stuff's easier to learn than other stuff, especially like I know how to file paperwork, do taxes for businesses on a higher scale, which helps me with Lagger, which not a lot of people get. But I think when it comes to like simple stuff, like learning where to put logos, learning where to put advertisements, a lot of that is more modern and more easy to learn just because how big social media is and how simple a lot of that stuff is. So it does all play a role for sure. Depending on what you do, obviously we play more, especially like if you go to school for law, you're going to know a lot more than someone who gets their, like learns off Twitter. So yeah, I think that can help. It all depends what you do. Obviously me being in retail, I can learn how to deal with like players who want to be nasty because I deal with customers who want to be nasty. That's a good skill to have and learn not to like snap or anything on players. But a lot of that stuff, obviously it will come when it comes, especially in esports, like you learn when to talk to players, when not to talk to players, you learn where and when to put advertisements. So I think a lot of that does play into it.
Yeah. I think, you know, the thing that I was thinking in my mind was more along the lines of the communication that you have with other people in the business. So, you know, the energy drink sponsors, like you talk about Strikeforce coming into your station and, you know, having communication with them and kind of learning through them that they have opportunities available to sponsor things. Right. And so that through that process, you were able to develop, you know, that relationship, and that seems extremely valuable. I know I have some personal, you know, experience with that when as a club promoter and working with different liquor companies and things like that to get them to come sponsor shows. And it's sort of has become transferable skills because it's still the entertainment business when we get into esports and gaming. I'm a little bit older than you, obviously. I'm 27 now. And so I'm definitely, I feel in some ways, communicate in a different way. And I know that, from my experience talking with you, is that you've sort of, developed a lot of experience over a short period of time, and it's very strategic and methodical the way that you've been doing things. And I think, you know, one of the things I want to know about is what's it like taking your course, your Udemy course, and what can students or people looking to learn more about esports learn from taking your courses?
Yeah, so like right now I have 6 courses planned. I have 2 already out, 1 pending approved from them, and of course I'm working on the rest. I always want to have 1 fully done before I even touch the next one, just so nothing gets neglected in the process. So of course I have it broken down. My first one's obviously this overview. Then my second one is all about event planning, because I started events so young. And sadly, because I started so young, it ruined a lot of stuff for me back then, especially when like a venue wanted me to sign the lease. I wasn't old enough, or I had to rent the equipment and get co-signed and all that. I wasn't old enough. So like I had a lot of those problems early on. And in that course, I talk about how I got around those problems when I was young, how I deal with them now being old enough, because a lot of the venues I used back then, I can still use now. So where do I cross the line of like, hey, renting and putting down a deposit, that kind of stuff? And then the second one, which is currently, or the third one, which is currently in review right now, is a lot about the logistics about it, like how different states view esports. A lot of states don't view it as its own entity right now. A lot of them view it as sort of a talent agency and a like consulting company, and the kind of stuff that comes about that. And then, you know, of course, you have the legalities like copyrights, trademarks, that kind of stuff, which thankfully is more like set in stone than like business classification when it comes to esports. Mm-hmm. So those are all the ones I either have out or working on right now. And then the other ones I'm going to talk about are mostly like the content side of things, what to expect, what kind of skills you're going to need. And then the next one, the next full course I'm working on now is the jobs in esports. It's like, because I've been working a lot with collegiate esports right now, even though someone's going to college for Call of Duty or Overwatch or any of that, a lot of those people are pursuing media degrees. So whether it's film, graphic design, anything that involves entertainment or media production, that kind of stuff, can all tie back into esports. Like if you're going and pursuing photography, videography, audiovisual production, any of that, obviously that fully ties into esports, whether you're editing someone's videos, moderating someone's live stream, or even just producing events, streaming events, all that ties back into esports. So that the next course I'm talking about is how all that can tie back into esports. Like, hey, you want to do videography and photography, if you play games, you can do both, especially for a lot of these community colleges or like a film school or tech school. A lot of these tech schools are the ones that do esports because these are the schools that get more direct learning rather than getting a degree from a traditional college. So you get more hands-on stuff like what I explained rather than like a degree in science. And I think that helps a lot, especially with education esports, because esports isn't like at the level right now to get like a bachelor's in esports or associates in esports, just because a lot more colleges still need to recognize it as a norm. So like going and getting a education in something you tie back into esports is great. And that's what I'm working on with these careers. I'll be explaining, like for me, I do my graphic designs, I do my video editing myself. So I'm working on that in college. And I'm also working on my UI UX stuff, which is whether it's coding a website, working on a game demo, or doing something simple like WordPress. That all still ties back into esports because I learned how to do graphic design, I learned how to edit website coding, and I learned how to edit videos, all from doing UI UX stuff, which is one of the cheaper things you can do at a technical school, because even getting a 2-year degree in that is only about $10,000, especially if you go to one in the South. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that is cheap, which I know the cost of college can be a killer for a lot of people, especially for me at first, it was a big killer. And then a lot of these, you can also take minors in esports, which does tie into like, so I know some technical schools, your minor would be video production, but in that class, you would be doing the video production for the esports program. So not only are you learning and getting your education, but you're also directly supporting esports and working in esports. And a lot of those are also considered student jobs, which you get paid for, depends on the college, obviously. So you can tie a lot of stuff to esports, and thankfully colleges now are starting to learn that and apply that. And that's what I'm going to be talking about in my next course, especially like not only am I taking this at the Fashion Institute Technology for New York, which I'm taking online, but their class, they have a split up between 6 modules, like 6 topics. 5 of them are about the UI UX, split up between graphic design, video editing, website design. And then the last one is esports, business side of esports, and then entertainment side of esports. And I think tying on these esports, whether it's how I'm doing it or like the technical schools do with your minors being a student job in esports, all of that's obviously going to tie together and help you in the long run. And I think that is a good step.
I agree with you on all those things. I think that trade school is incredibly more valuable at at this point in time is with esports, stealing word from you, sadly, is very, there's very few financially stable or financially secure positions within the space, that you don't have to do something else. You don't have to be in some other industry, music, gaming, all these other different industries in order to sustain a lifestyle. Now for streamers, streaming is also separate from esports. You know, it's another career, outside of just playing, and not just playing, but actually playing the games competitively, in esports. But yeah, you know, time flies really fast. I want to give you this opportunity to promote some things that you've got going on. Also, let us know where people can follow you and where they can get connected with you best.
Yeah, so as far as the organization-wise, best place to reach out is obviously Twitter. We use primarily. You have Facebook, YouTube, Twitch. You also have eFuse and Geo if you're a collegiate student, because we are on both platforms. We are pretty active on both platforms since a lot of our students are also collegiate players. Personally, I'm mostly on Twitter and eFuse and Discord. Whether I'm in any server just hanging out or I'm playing in Fortnite tournaments, because that's all you can do nowadays with COVID. So I think those would be the best place to reach out. Obviously, if you want to follow our sponsors, we do work with Strikeforce Energy, Control Freak, Sector 6, and hopefully one more soon. Depends how my next call goes. So those would be the best places to reach out to me. And yeah, it was fun.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And thank you to all the listeners. This has been the Esports Business Network podcast. Hey, y'all. It's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our Bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the Bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.